Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome everyone. We're going to get started right away. First thing I would like you to do is to please go to Wiser Living, WEISERLiving.com, and on that initial page you will see on the right-hand side where you can get a Skype consultation, and if you wait a few seconds there will be a pop-up where you can actually insert your name and your email address. You can also click on the Wiser Living TV link and watch all of your YouTube videos that we've all of the YouTube videos we've uploaded. By subscribing, you'll not only get access to these educational videos, but you'll also be informed when a new video is uploaded. So you can also get access to our archived radio programs at Wiser Living Radio, which you are listening to right now. And you can check us, or at least check out the menu bar that lists all of the articles, the programs and services, Wiser Living seminars, recipes and products. So do take a look at that at your earliest convenience. So check us out, sign up, put your name and email address in. It's free at wiserliving.com. Subscribe at Wiser Living TV. Follow us at Wiser Living Radio. Like us at facebook.com/wiserliving, and you can also connect with us at Google+, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. Okay. All right, you guys. This is Dr. Bud Wiser, and I am coming to you directly from the Wiser Living headquarters, and I would like to welcome each and every one of you who have taken the time out to tune into this broadcast today. Your time is valuable, and I am truly grateful for your participation. So over the next 28 minutes or so, I want to add to your wellness experience. Cardiovascular disease, heart disease. Cardiovascular disease, wow, it's the number one cause of death in the world, and the disease estimates are increasing each year. A heart attack occurs basically when the blood flow to a specific part of the heart is blocked by a blood clot. And if this clot, if it completely cuts off blood flow, then the part of the heart muscle being supplied by that artery begins to die. Heart failure is a type of a cardiovascular disease or congestive heart failure, where the heart isn't pumping blood as well as it should. The heart keeps working, but the body's need for, say, oxygenated blood is not being met. Arrhythmia. Arrhythmia is an abnormal rhythm of the heart, which is characterized as the heart either beating too slow or beating too fast. Now, when it's beating, say, like 60 beats per minute or lower, it's called bradycardia. When it's beating at 100 beats per minute or higher, and this is sustained, this is like a chronic beating, high, it's called tachycardia. And arrhythmia can affect how well the heart works. The heart, in this case, may be able to pump enough blood to meet the body's needs. A lot of times we have these different types of, the blood flow and the clotting and the heart basically not getting the oxygen that it needs, and it leads to issues. Then there's the problem with the heart valves itself, which is another type of cardiovascular disease. This one occurs when the heart valves don't open enough to allow the blood to actually flow through as it should. And this is a condition named stenosis. When the heart valves don't close properly and allow the blood to leak through it, it's called regurgitation or regurge. In other words, you get a backflow of blood through a defective heart valve. You know, when the valve leaflets bulge or prolapse back into the upper chamber, it's a condition called mitral valve prolapse. Basically, it's a backflow from the lower left heart chamber to the upper left heart chamber. Some of the symptoms of mitral valve prolapse include chest pain, exertion leading to shortness of breath, swelling of the legs and feet, palpitations, or basically rapid heartbeat, dizziness, fainting, anxiety, as well as numbness or tingling in the hands and feet. Now, I mention all of those and a lot of other chronic ailments you will experience this always as well. So you can't just rely on just these symptoms to make a diagnosis of heart problems. Now, how does a heart attack actually occur? You know, what are the sequence events? Well, any theory out there as to what causes this issue usually includes the most consistent risk factors, such as being a male, having diabetes, smoking cigarettes, and psychological or emotional stress, which probably should be at the top of the list, because that's one issue that a lot of us don't have a handle on. You know, what's very interesting here is that in none of these is there a direct link to pathology of the coronary arteries. Diabetes and cigarette use cause disease in the small capillaries, not in the large arteries. So what has also been learned in the past decades is that four main medicines of modern cardiology, like beta blockers, nitrates, aspirin, and statin drugs, the statin drugs basically control cholesterol, all provide some benefits for heart patients, even though there's some serious drawbacks to it. So the sequence of events that leads to a heart attack go like this. First comes a decrease in the healing or tonic activity of the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the regenerative half of the nervous system. In most of the cases, the road to a heart attack will not proceed unless this condition is met. So you have the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. We'll go into it. I know it's a lot of science terms, but it's very important here. Basically, think of a person who is always pushing themselves, who never takes time out, who has no hobbies, who constantly stimulates the adrenal cortex with, because you may not know what the adrenal cortex is, but you're stimulating that adrenal cortex with caffeine or sugar. A person who doesn't nourish their body with real food and good fats, and who does not incorporate a regular pattern of eating and sleeping into their daily life. Then comes an increase in the sympathetic nervous system activity, and this is the fight or flight system, from a physical or an emotional stressor. Now, this increase in the sympathetic activity cannot be balanced because the other half, or the parasympathetic regenerative nervous system, is chronically suppressed, which means that the body is not getting its required rest, and rest is the key here. The rest of this is an uncontrolled increase of adrenaline, which causes the heart cells to start breaking down. It's going to break down into sugar, and the sugar is called glucose, using aerobic glycolysis. Another scientific term, which is a fancy word meaning that the conversion of glucose to lactate. Now, lactate being the substance that allows your muscles to keep working. Remember, the heart is a muscle. This step shunts the metabolism of the heart away from its preferred and most efficient fuel sources, which are ketones and fatty acids. Now, this explains why heart patients often feel like really tired before their attack. This also explains why a diet which incorporates a liberal amount of good fats and low in sugar is crucial for heart health. And as a result of the sympathetic fight or flight adrenaline increase and the resulting glycolysis or the sugar breakdown, there's a dramatic increase in lactic acid production in the heart cells. A lot of say track athletes know what this lactic acid is because they get this burning sensation in their legs and they're running. And they don't have this. They don't have the energy or the oxygen that they need. So when this happens, or basically when it happens in virtually 100% of the heart attacks, this actually is due to a mechanism that is not coronary artery related. Even though they say the coronary arteries is the main issue in a heart attack. So as a result of this increase in lactic acid in the heart cells, you get acidosis, which will prevent calcium from entering the cells. If the calcium is not entering the cells, it makes the cells less able to contract. Since the heart cells can't contract and they're not contracting properly, it causes swelling, or this is called edema. It's caused this swelling is a dysfunction of the walls of the heart and eventually necrosis or death of the tissue, in other words, a heart attack. So the three words, a heart attack, is basically almost it takes a couple of minutes. There's a lot of things going on for that to happen. This heart tissue swelling will also cause unstable plaques in the heart vessels or the arteries to rupture, which further blocks the artery, which in turn worsens the condition in that area of the heart. So, if heart disease is fundamentally caused by a deficiency in the parasympathetic nervous system, then the solution, obviously, is to nurture and protect that system, which is the same as saying we should protect ourselves. There's a hormone that nourishes the parasympathetic system that is made in the adrenal cortex, that's in the adrenal glands, in the cortex part of it, and it's called G-strophanthin. It's manufactured, it's actually manufactured in our adrenal cortex from cholesterol. It's adversely affected if you are taking a cholesterol-lowering medication. So if you're on a cholesterol-lowering medication, your body is not going to be able to make this G-strophanthin, which is important for heart health. So diet is important for this to be made properly. So if you didn't get anything else out of what I said in the last few minutes, if you want to prevent or strengthen the heart, diet is important. Diet is important for this not only the hormone G-strophanthin to be made, but for you to have heart health. So what about an aspirin a day? An aspirin a day keeps the doctor away. Nice rhyme there, but for those with heart attack risk, it may not be so. Well, it can be a life-saving option, but it's not for everyone. Basically, aspirin therapy reduces the clumping action of platelets, and possibly preventing a heart attack. But each time you take an aspirin, you deplete nutrients like folic acid, iron, potassium, sodium, and vitamin C. Now, depletion of folic acid can produce symptoms of tiredness, weakness, diarrhea, and water weight loss. Most people want to lose weight, but you don't want to lose water, and you don't want to lose muscle. Symptoms of iron depletion are, again, weakness and fatigue, anemia, of course, headaches and hair loss, because the major function of iron is to transport oxygen by hemoglobin. And the heart needs oxygen, and it needs plenty of it. Potassium. Symptoms of potassium depletion include diabetic acidosis, irregular heartbeat, fatigue. Here it is, that word again. Muscle weakness, muscle contraction. Remember, the heart is a muscle, and if it's unable to contract properly, it can lead to a what? Heart problems. You get dehydration and muscle weakness with sodium depletion. And remember, once again, the heart is a what? It's a muscle. And deficiency of vitamin C, you know, has cardiovascular functions, which include increasing HDL levels, which is a happy high density or happy, what I call the happy lipoprotein levels, decreasing LDL, or what's termed as the bad cholesterol, and total cholesterol as well. So vitamin C has an integral part in balancing the cholesterol numbers. Vitamin C is necessary for the synthesis of collagen and elastin, which makes or maintains strength and elasticity of the blood vessel. Think coronary artery. And it decreases the level of lipoprotein A, which is now known to form atherosclerotic plaques. So it may not keep the doctor away. That aspirin may not, or that baby aspirin, may not keep the doctor away. It may keep it away from the heart, but what about the other areas of your body? Now, at the beginning of our program, I shared that cardiovascular diseases are the number one cause of death in the world. In the United States, about 1 in 3 deaths can be attributed to cardiovascular disease. Now, and this includes heart attacks and stroke. Now, the most common type of heart disease in the U.S. is coronary artery disease, which can lead to a heart attack once again. Now, even though the death rate from cardiovascular diseases has declined by approximately 29%, it's still the number one cause of death in the United States. And according to a new report from the United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention, about 800,000 Americans, 800,000, die from cardiovascular disease each year. And 25%, or about 200,000 of these individuals, could have, you know, their deaths could have been prevented through a simple lifestyle change. Wow. 200,000 people, their deaths could have been prevented through simple lifestyle changes. And more than a half, roughly about 6 out of 10 of the preventable heart disease and stroke deaths happen to people under the age of 65. Now, the current life expectancy in the U.S. is age 78. So if people die sooner than that age, it is considered early or premature. So how can you avoid becoming a statistic, or can you? Well, according to the CDC report again, preventive lifestyle strategies include maintaining a healthy weight, very critical, maintaining a healthy weight, exercising regularly. And when we look at maintaining a healthy weight, a lot of us, you know, when it comes to the discipline of eating or eating certain foods or foods that are nourishing, we don't really put we don't connect the dots when we look at food. You know, and I talk about let your food be your medicine, let your medicine be your food. I mean, you hear it, it sounds nice, but this is something that you have to consciously be aware of. I mean, you know, like, remind yourself 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day in order to get into your subconscious where it's a habit where you automatically do it. So maintaining a healthy weight, exercising regularly. Here, when we talk about exercise, I know a lot of times we think we got to go to health spa, we have to spend some money, get into a health spa, and we have to actually go there, so we have to take some time out of a day to do it. When a lot of the exercise, I mean, if you can do 10 minutes a day, or matter of fact, say 15 to 20 minutes 3 times a week, it will go a long way to taking a critical muscle in your body, which is the heart, and moving it from a situation of dysfunction to function. So exercising regularly is important. Managing your blood pressure and diabetes. Managing your blood pressure and diabetes. Critical here, because blood pressure is kind of like or considered a silent killer, because a lot of times you don't really know your blood pressure is high for an extended period of time, because it's not like you're taking your blood pressure every day or twice a week or whatever. And a lot of times we don't even know we're having a problem, but the damage is being done inside the body. It gets to a critical stage, and then you go to your doctor and you find that you have high blood pressure, which means that you have to get on some kind of hypertensive medication. So you want to manage your blood pressure. Of course, if you are at a healthy weight and you're exercising regularly, and of course, you know, not mentioning, you know, handling your stress levels appropriately, then your blood pressure is going to be fine. Diabetes, blood sugar. Here again, when you think diabetes, think food types. Is your cell getting the basic nutrition that it needs in order to be functional, fully functional? Is it getting the food? Is the hormone regulation? Is that hormone regulator working? Is it being protected from toxins and from, you know, bad bacteria and viruses and things like that each and every day? So diabetes, blood sugar is basically a nutrition issue. Reducing salt consumption. We're talking about table salt here. Quitting smoking, for those of you who smoke, which means that if you want to prevent cardiovascular disease, if you want to prevent it, you would need to reduce chronic inflammation inside your body. That's the key, is the inflammatory reactions that are going inside. Now, obviously, you know what inflammation is. On the outside, you sprain your ankle, it swells, it gets red, it gets hot, you know, you can't move it. You know, that's inflammation. But you have this low-grade inflammatory responses going on in the body all the time, which you got to get. Your body needs to get a handle on that in order to prevent cardiovascular issues. Chronic inflammation must be reduced. Now, the cornerstones of an anti-inflammatory lifestyle are a proper diet, exercise, sun exposure, and grounding to the earth. Now, a lot of people don't know, are not aware about this grounding of the earth, but grounding to the earth is like when you walk barefoot in your house or on grass or sand if you're at the beach or what have you. So that's important. And while the CDC's recommendations are spot on, there's still plenty of room for improvement when it comes to more detailed recommendations for how to achieve weight loss and how to manage health-related issues like diabetes and high blood pressure. One example of this is the recommendation to reduce salt intake. Table salt is harmful. There are healthy promoting salts like Himalayan pink salt that's high in essential trace minerals, like it's about 90-plus minerals and trace minerals there. Matter of fact, I did a video on the benefits of Soleil and how to make it and take it. So you can go to, you can type in on the in the YouTube search box, Dr. Budweiser and Soleil, S-O-L-E, and it'll bring that video up. You probably want to take a look at that. If you have already, do it again. When it comes to inflammation in the body, your diet is your best ally. And a lot of emphasis is placed on cholesterol lowering it. But it is important to realize that statin drugs do lower cholesterol. They do, but they also promote inflammation, and it also accelerates heart disease. You know, a 2012 study published in the journal Atherosclerosis showed that statin use is associated with a 52% increased prevalence and extent of calcified coronary plaque compared to those who don't take cholesterol-lowering drugs or statins. And coronary artery calcification is the hallmark of potential lethal heart disease. Now, people with the genetic defect called familial hypercholesterolemia, they can benefit from a cholesterol medication. And the only way to reduce inflammation and the subsequent damage inside your body, the only way to do that is through your diet. So rather than taking a cholesterol-lowering medication, you really, really need to direct your complete focus on your diet to reduce inflammation in your body, which is aggravated by eating lots of sugar or fructose and grains. So limit grain intake. Remember, you need 63 glasses of water to dilute the sugar content in a 12-ounce or 0.35 liters of your favorite soda. It's aggravated by oxidized cholesterol, which is cholesterol that has gone rancid, such as that from overcooked, say, scrambled eggs. Eating foods cooked at high temperatures and eating trans fat, especially those hidden in processed foods, can be a problem when it comes to heart issues. Now, just talked to a young lady who got her had some blood tests done, and in some of the areas, the recommendation was to actually don't use butter and start using margarine and, you know, stuff that they say trans fat free, but some of the recommendations are going to cause trans fatty acids. So it's really important that you get a handle on your diet. You know, it's aggravated by oxidized cholesterol. Once again, I want you to know that when you're eating rancid oil, it's going to cause a problem. So processed foods you want to kind of eliminate. As a matter of fact, let me give you a few recommendations along those lines. So you might want to try to jot these down. If I have time, I'll go over them twice. Number one, limit or eliminate all processed foods, period. Number one, limit or eliminate all processed foods. Number two, drastically reduce gluten and eliminate all highly allergenic foods from your diet. Number three, eat organic foods whenever possible to avoid exposure to harmful agricultural chemicals like glyphosate. Basically, if you have GMOs, if it's non-GMO, then you can eat it. Probably, most likely you can eat it if it's non-GMO because there's not going to be that glyphosate. Number four, eat at least a third of your food uncooked, meaning raw, or as much as you can manage. Obviously, I'm not talking about meat, so let me get that in there. Not meat. You got to cook the meat. Now, number five, increase the amount of fresh vegetables in your diet. Increase the amount of fresh vegetables in your diet. Number six, avoid artificial sweeteners of all kinds, like the plague. Just completely avoid it. Don't go there. Number seven, swap all trans fats. That means vegetable oils, margarine, canola oil, and et cetera, et cetera, for healthy fats like avocado oil, raw butter. Actually, the raw butter should be from grass-fed cows, coconut oil, or red palm oil. Number eight, to rebalance your omega-3 to omega-6 ratios, take a high-quality omega-3 supplement, you know, one that's preferably NSF certified. NSF certification should be somewhere on that bottle or whatever you're buying, no matter whether it's omega-3 or whatever. But if you get rid of the trans fats, like especially like I see when I go do home visits, I see a lot of people have vegetable oils in their home. That's the wrong oil. That's going to cause an imbalance in your omega-3 to omega-6. So to rebalance, get some omega-3 into your system. Make sure it's NSF certified. Number nine, drink plenty of water. I could take hours on this one. It's really critical that you stay hydrated. Stay hydrated. So drink plenty of pure. Optimize your vitamin D levels, either through appropriate sun exposure, a safe tanning bed, or an oral vitamin D, D3. Make sure it's vitamin D3 supplement. Number 11, limit fructose to less than 25 grams per day from all sources, including whole fruits. Now, even if you have insulin resistance, or if you have it, if you have insulin resistance, diabetes, hypertension, or high blood pressure, or heart disease, you should make a concerted effort to keep your fructose level below 15 grams per day. So even if you're like you're eating whole fruit, even though it's a good sugar, fructose is a good sugar, but in if you get too much of it, it could be just the opposite. Number 12, optimize your insulin and optimize your leptin levels by drastically reducing your intake of grains and sugars. You know, cut your fructose consumption back to at least 15 grams per day, and then you know you're safe, which I just mentioned in the last point. Number 13, get some coenzyme Q10 as a supplement. Get that into your system because symptoms of coenzyme Q10 deficiency include congestive heart failure, high blood pressure, angina, mitral valve prolapse, stroke, cardiac arrhythmias, cardiomyopathy, as well as generalized weakening of the immune system so the immune system can't help the body to get away from inflammation. You know, drugs that deplete coenzyme Q10 drugs that deplete coenzyme Q10 are high blood pressure medication, high cholesterol medication, and diabetic medication. So all of the things that should be making you better is going to cause a heart issue. Also supplement with a good, effective whole plant food vitamin and mineral complex that is NSF certified. Make sure it's a whole plant food vitamin and mineral complex and make sure you have the NSF certification. You can email me at Wiser Living to get some specific information on this if you wish. And since we're getting close to the half hour stage, so I think I better wrap this up right now. So go check us out at the wiserliving.com webpage. Subscribe to Wiser Living TV. Follow us at Wiser Living Radio. Like us at facebook.com/wiserliving and connect with us at Google, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. And so with that, we look at when we think heart, think diet. When you're talking about your diet, you're going to think heart. If you have the correct nutrients in your system, you're going to be heart healthy. Be sensible, you guys out there, and look in your cabinets and look at the ingredients and get what you shouldn't have in your household. Get it out and get the proper stuff in there. Remember, let your food be your medicine and let your medicine be your food. This is Dr. Budweiser, and we'll see you next time.